Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck. Today on the show, we'll focus most of our attention on the impacts COVID-19 is having on the state. The coronavirus is identifying the shortage of intensive care unit beds in the United States, but there's another shortage that might be even more important in our region.
There have been long-standing provider shortages in rural America.
Wyoming's top K-12 education official gives an update on how the coronavirus has affected schools.
We really don't anticipate that every school district will go to virtual education. Some will be a hybrid.
And we'll also hear how parents are scrambling to figure out how to homeschool their kids.
You kind of have this anxiety like, oh my God, are we all supposed to be doing this all of a sudden?
Those stories and much more coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck. As the coronavirus continues to spread across the United States, we hear a lot about the shortage of intensive care unit beds. But perhaps there's another more important shortage, especially in rural areas. That's the lack of healthcare providers. Wyoming Public Radio's Camila Kudelska explains.
When Park County had its first COVID-19 case, it turned out to be a Cody Regional Health Hospital employee. This sparked fear among the community on whether or not the hospital was exposed.
That's not true. That's unfortunate, but people are scared. We understand that.
That's Cody Regional Health CEO Doug McMillan. He says when the case was identified, the local public health officer, the state health department, and the Billings Clinic all assisted in an investigation.
With that identified, starting with the individuals that are employee that tested positive during the times the employee was working, we identified a number of employees that had potential exposure.
He says 5 to 10 employees were sent home to self-quarantine since they were seen as high risk.
We've been able to free up staff as we've closed some of those departments for the safety of our patients and staff. And so we have been able to develop essentially a labor pool.
But this begs to ask the question, what happens if more healthcare providers at the hospital do get sick? For the CEO of the National Rural Health Association, Alan Morgan, it's not a question, it's a fact. It will happen.
There have already been a couple of communities that right now are really facing the surge of this case. One rural community in Indiana has all of its beds filled right now with COVID-19 patients, and its clinical staff, several. I think last I heard, 4 of them have been tested positive as well, too.
And rural hospitals are especially at high risk.
There have been long-standing provider shortages in rural America. Almost by definition, rural is a health profession shortage area. So this has been a long-standing concern.
Wyoming is aware of this. Like many other states during this pandemic, the state has loosened regulations to allow licensed American doctors to practice in Wyoming even if they are not licensed in the state. Cody Regional Health is already taking advantage of this by bringing in providers from the Billings Clinic. But Morgan says rural areas are going to have to figure out more solutions.
We're going to have a lot of creative solutions to staffing going ahead. And that's going to happen in rural communities. Already we are seeing that.
Jan Cartwright with the Wyoming Primary Care Association says health centers in the state have implemented a new system where a provider, medical assistant, and a front office staff are the only ones that come in contact with a patient during their visit.
And that way, if there were a patient who came in who was testing positive, then that team, of course, would have to self-isolate for 14 days, but it wouldn't wipe out the entire provider team.
Cartwright adds that hospitals, health centers, and pharmacies are all trying to limit these human interactions.
They have a walk-in pharmacy, and they now have decided that they're going to take those prescriptions out to the patients to their cars instead of having the patients come into the health centers.
And it seems these efforts are working in Park County for now. Park County Public Health Officer Dr. Aaron Billen says no matter what, there will still be more cases confirmed in the county.
Every night for the last three or four nights, I've been expecting a call from the state health officer informing us of a new positive result, but it hasn't happened. So to me, that's encouraging, and it tells me that we're on the right track.
But Billen says for this to continue, it's really up to the community's cooperation in social distancing and non-essential businesses keeping their doors shut firmly. Morgan agrees.
It's really important for rural communities to isolate and take care of themselves and take this serious just to keep their own clinical staff there, present, working, and safe.
Whether or not residents follow that advice remains to be seen. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Camila Kadalska at the Center of the West in Cody.
Wyoming lawmakers did the unexpected this week and rallied behind the largest economic stimulus package ever passed by Congress. Correspondent Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington that the state's fiscal conservatives say the package is essential, even if the price tag is staggering.
At the start of the new year, the U.S. economy was soaring. But now, most everything has come to a government-mandated halt, which is rippling across the economy, which has been a shock for most lawmakers, including Wyoming Senator John Barrasso.
There are inevitable surprises in life, and I'll tell you, this has been one of the strangest and most devastating that we have faced, certainly in the lifetime of most Americans. And it just shows you how fragile and quickly things can change.
The fear of a looming Great Recession forced the Trump administration and lawmakers in both parties to come together and forge a $2 trillion compromise. The proposal includes more than a $1,000 payment to adults who make $75,000 a year or less, along with $500 per child. Barrasso says he'd rather everyone still be able to go to work, but that's impossible with a global pandemic spreading from coast to coast.
Essentially, the government has shut down the country in an effort to fight the disease. It was necessary, yes, and that's why I believe government needed to step up and step in, as we did with this legislation, to make sure that the American people, who through no fault of their own were out of work, could be taken care of.
Under the deal, every state is guaranteed at least $1.25 billion, which Barrasso says is essential for Wyoming right now.
Wyoming has been especially hit hard from an economic standpoint, with a significant slowdown in the world economy. Oil prices have dropped significantly, much more than anybody would have ever predicted, and especially with what Russia and Saudi Arabia are doing as well to flood the market. Our economy has been hammered from an energy standpoint as well as an agriculture standpoint. So the impact of the coronavirus on Wyoming has been significant.
The proposal did hit a last-minute snag in the Senate. A handful of conservatives feared the proposal would incentivize some lower-income workers to quit their jobs in order to receive more generous unemployment benefits than they usually get in their normal paycheck. Here's South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott.
We cannot encourage people to make more money in unemployment than they do in employment.
Both Barrasso and Wyoming Senior Senator Mike Enzi ended up supporting that effort, but it failed by a 48-48 tie. But the final package won both of their support. And Enzi is the budget chairman, who is constantly beating the drum about the need for fiscal discipline because of the nation's more than $20 trillion debt. Still, Enzi says the economy needs this $2 trillion infusion right now.
We're encouraging businesses to keep their employees and have them for when this ends and goes back to normal, they'll already have the trained employees that they need, and the employees will have been able to survive this period of what's essentially a government forced shutdown.
And Enzi says he didn't take his vote lightly.
Well, every time anybody mentions some benefit of any kind, I start doing calculations as the budget chairman on how much that's going to be and how we're ever going to pay it back. But this is a bona fide crisis, and we can save money by spending some money now, I think.
Enzi says even though Wyoming hasn't been hit with a wave of the COVID-19 virus yet, that doesn't mean state officials and the public can let down their guard.
the big cities are getting hit harder, and consequently, they got more money for coronavirus problems. But we have to be really careful in Wyoming. We haven't had it hit yet, and it shouldn't hit us as hard as other places because we do have fewer people. We do have more room to maintain separation.
Enzi says fiscal conservatives need to hold their noses and swallow this massive proposal because businesses need the hundreds of billions of dollars in it to stay afloat.
It's an employee retention bill, and I thought it was the key piece of the whole legislation. Even if people have to be self-quarantined, their pay could continue, and the business could borrow, and on a very quick loan through community banks and small business offices and things like that, in a hurry to be able to continue to pay their employees so they didn't have to lay them off, so they didn't have to put them on unemployment and have them lose their health insurance.
There's already talk of Congress needing to pass a fourth stimulus bill in the coming weeks and months to address the coronavirus, which is giving Wyoming lawmakers a little pause because they want to see the impact of this historic $2 trillion infusion into the economy first. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
When we come back, the state auditor joins us to discuss an effort to help businesses and others maneuver through the pandemic and how a housing crisis is leading to coronavirus challenges on the Wind River Reservation. This is Open Spaces. Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Bob Beck. Governor Mark Gordon has appointed the other top four elected officials in the state to explore some challenges facing Wyoming and try and find solutions. One interesting committee chaired by State Auditor Christy Racines is looking at the business and financial sector as Wyoming faces a devastating downturn. As we started the interview, I mentioned to her that many business owners right now are scared.
That's very justified. I mean, different businesses are impacted differently, and their strength going into this situation will play some into how they weather the storm. But I think I can comfortably say that no one's going to come out of this unscathed. This is no one's going to be held harmless from this situation. And again, it's impacting different businesses differently, and they're having different needs immediately. And our business owners they kind of have a double whammy here. They're very much concerned about their own families and their own welfare and their health and whatnot. But what I'm really hearing from businesses from a triage standpoint is they're really worried about their employees. They don't have any choice and haven't had any choice in some situations but to lay off folks, and they know their employees, and they know that will cripple some folks financially and affect their abilities to provide for their families or pay their rent.
One of the things that I was talking to a local business owner in Laramie just a little bit about this, and the ability for businesses to diversify more. We all talk about ourselves, but in our investing or whatever it might be. But for businesses to do more than just maybe one thing or two things, is that something that might come out of this that might help people going forward?
I think so. I think that is a possibility, and we're seeing some really creative solutions and ideas that are sort of being born from this. One of them that I'm sure you've heard about is there's an effort to turn our state distilleries. There's at least five that are participating. They're repurposing their workforce and equipment and abilities into manufacturing hand sanitizer and then distributing it to those in need in their communities, because, as you know, you can't procure hand sanitizer at the moment. So that's a really, really neat. Again, I don't want to say it's hard to say that positive things are coming out of this, but it's certainly a bright spot of some ingenuity and folks working together.
Are you getting any good ideas that might allow people to kind of keep their heads at least near the top of the water?
Yeah, so I'll talk about a few of the things we're working on, and I just want to clarify that nothing's done until it's done. Some of the things we're looking at and working on is eliminating the waiting period for unemployment. You know, currently, if you lose your job, there's a waiting period for that. And I think we all know why folks are losing their job now. So we're looking at eliminating that. We're also looking at some creative ways to match up employees or workers who have just lost their job and businesses who are actually ramping up and need extra help, and identifying both of those classes and then sort of connecting those. Because you think about, I'm guessing you may have noticed as you venture out, you know, once a week or whatever to go to your grocery store, they're trying to hire folks to help stock and to help clean. And there's certain, while it's not the majority, there are certain businesses in the community that are scrambling to get extra folks on board to help with the response and to help with supply chain. So we're looking at matching those up. You've probably heard as well that the Small Business Administration loans through the federal government, all Wyoming counties businesses are now eligible to apply for those loans. Now, that doesn't mean that's the best solution for everyone, and it may not be. So we're really encouraging businesses to give their local banker a call first and work out solutions with those. Our local banks and credit unions are being phenomenal. And as far as helping people out with payments and just offering a little flexibility there or loans if necessary. You know, the other role I see us playing, and this doesn't sound very exciting or sexy, but we really need to become an information hub for both businesses and workers that are looking for solutions. So if you're a small business in Casper, or if you're running a small business on Thermopolis Main Street, you know, you're having so many things come at you right now, and you have so many buckets of problems. You're worried about your health. You're worried about your family's health. You're worried about your employees. You're worried about your ability to pay your mortgage on your building or pay your rent. You're worried about your employees' ability to pay. You know, there's so many things coming at you. And so if we can simplify some of these resources so you know which tree to bark up, that's, to me, that would be very helpful.
Christy, in the final minute we have here, I'm almost afraid to ask you this question, but what does the revenue sheet look like right now as we look at paying cities and counties and all the things we have to pay for?
Wow. You know, at the moment, I mean, we're towards the end of a biennium, and we have reserves, and all state agencies are operating you know, out of their existing budgets, and that's going fine. What it looks like 3 months or 6 months or a year from now, I think that's a question to be answered. And I think it depends on so many factors. And I know that's a wishy-washy politician answer, but obviously what's going on with oil is exacerbating whatever economic impact this will have substantially to Wyoming. So I think some of that will remain to be seen. But I think it will be a different world budget-wise, maybe in a couple months, that we have to sort out and figure out what we need to do.
We'll check in with you later, Christy Racinas, your state auditor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great one.
With the first confirmed case of COVID-19 on the Wind River Reservation, the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes have enacted some of the strictest measures in the state to slow the spread. But a housing crisis there makes those directives hard to follow. Wyoming Public Radio's Savannah Marr reports on how the congressional stimulus bill might offer some relief.
This first confirmed case is what Wind River has been bracing for. The patient, a woman in her 70s, is hospitalized in Lander. The tribes have jointly directed their citizens not to leave their homes, to stay away from elders, and to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10. But for a good portion of tribal households, those orders contradict each other.
Every unit, I would have to say, is overcrowded.
That's Hope Tidzump, deputy director of the Eastern Shoshone Tribal Housing Authority. She says her office is chronically underfunded by the federal government. The same is true for the Northern Arapaho Housing Authority, and that's created a housing shortage on Wind River. Meanwhile, both tribes boast rapidly growing populations. In most places, Tidzump says this supply and demand problem would put huge numbers of people on the streets. But here on Wind River, housing insecurity looks different.
Given the fact that we're all in Native American families, you know, we bring in our loved ones, our grandparents take care of them, or, you know, grandparents taking care of their grandbabies.
The new rules that come with this pandemic are hard to follow when you share a home with 10 or 15 relatives. And Tidzump says if one person in a crowded home is infected, stopping the spread could be near impossible.
When it comes to the coronavirus, of course, me and my husband, we have 8 children. So, I mean, if one individual tests positive for it, of course, it's going to be hard to quarantine just that one child and us as parents.
Kevin Alice, CEO of the National Congress of American Indians, agrees.
Those kinds of living conditions, when you introduce a virus like this, could be catastrophic.
A 2017 study by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development found that 16% of Native households are overcrowded. That's compared to 2% nationally. And funding for federal Indian housing programs has been virtually frozen for decades.
Housing, although maybe at times has increased a little bit over the course of the last decades, it has an outpaced inflation, so it's really flatlined.
Alice says that constitutes a violation of treaty rights.
When tribes ceded millions and millions and millions of acres in exchange for all that land that was worth a fortune, the tribes got forever to have all their health care taken care of, all their education needs taken care of, all their infrastructure taken care of.
These past few weeks, Alice has been lobbying Congress to uphold its treaty responsibilities during the COVID-19 pandemic. The stimulus bill that's poised to pass might be a step in that direction. It sets aside $8 billion in direct funding to tribes and another $2 billion to federal Indian programs. Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico is vice chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. He was pushing for about twice that much, but he called this bill a good deal for Indian country, especially the $300 million headed to federal Indian housing programs.
The housing dollars have not been there for the tribes. And the good thing about this is we have a big infusion now into housing.
But Eastern Shoshone Business Councilwoman Karen Snyder says she'll believe it when she sees it.
We always see that, the trickle-down effect. By the time the actual dollars to the tribe, it's such a small pot of money. It's like, geez, why did we go through all of these administrative hoops and we end up with this?
She says the business council has been in emergency preparedness mode for weeks, and the housing issue hasn't slipped their minds. They have a plan to turn their temporarily shut down business into emergency quarantine housing.
We would get our Shoshone Rose Casino, the hotel part, because it is currently closed because of the COVID-19. So that's what we would do, is get some of those rooms available.
To be fair, Snyder says she's never seen the federal government so engaged in matters like Wind River's housing crisis.
We do see a silver lining with this, and it is for the federal government to actually start paying attention to Indian country.
But she says that shouldn't have taken a global pandemic. If and when federal aid does trickle down, Snyder says emergency housing will be a priority for the Eastern Shoshone tribe. But for now, they're doing what Indian country always does during a crisis, taking care of their own with what resources they have. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Savannah Marr on the Wind River Reservation.
When we come back, we'll look at why some in Cody are okay with the current closure of Yellowstone, and a look at what COVID-19 means for education. This is Open Spaces. This is Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck. Every year, thousands of American and international tourists pass through Cody as they leave or enter Yellowstone National Park. The summer tourism season officially starts May 1st when the East Gate opens. That's usually a busy time, but things might be different this year. Wyoming Public Radio's Camila Kudelska explains.
Every year, during the first week of May, Cody changes from a sleepy western town to a bustling community filled with tourists. One place where this is most apparent is the Buffalo Bill Center of the West, where the five museums go from empty to crowded.
We rely so heavily on tourists.
That's Peter Siebert. He is the CEO and executive director of the center. He says the museum made the difficult decision to close its doors last week for the safety of its staff, but hopes to reopen soon.
Much hinges upon things like the opening of Yellowstone to the public, things like that, that are outside of our control. So while we may be open, but Yellowstone is closed, that will impact our visitation as well.
Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks announced earlier this week that they are closing to all visitors with no planned reopening date. Yellowstone Superintendent Cam Shawley says the decision came after discussions with representatives of area's communities.
It's been a lot about them wanting to make sure they've got the health care infrastructure necessary to care for the residents of the county and the communities. It's about the supplies, you know, food, the things that are being delivered to these rural communities, and ensuring that we don't have large numbers of visitors taking supplies that residents need.
Shawley says he realizes how economically important Yellowstone is to the neighboring communities, but closing the park now will have minimal impact.
The park is still about 90% under snow, and so the vast majority of the roads in the park weren't scheduled to open until at the earliest April 17th, and in some cases as late as May 1st. Most of the roads in Wyoming in the park are in that situation.
Park County Travel Council Executive Director Claudia Wade agrees. She says this will give them time to assess the situation.
These next 5 weeks will determine how much that affects us. The news release today said it was a temporary closing. There were no deadlines or discussion about how long that will be. So hopefully, as we know, everything changes pretty quickly with this COVID-19, and it's hard to say what 5 weeks will do.
Wade says they are paying attention to what health officials are recommending about social distancing and will follow their lead. So even if the East Gate opens May 1st as planned, COVID-19 has impacted the beginning of the summer season.
I believe there are a few cancellations into June, but we are hopeful that we can get things turned around, or things will be turned around in time for us to salvage the latter part of the summer and have a good fall travel season.
Cody Country Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Tina Hobel-Henrich agrees. She's cautiously optimistic that Wyoming will flatten the curve in the next couple of months, and then when regulations are loosened, people will want to come to the area.
We do see that families are, you know, getting stir crazy and wanting to take advantage of the wide open spaces here in Wyoming and in Yellowstone.
But Park County Public Health Officer Dr. Aaron Billen says people should still be cautious, even if restrictions are removed.
People will start to forget the importance of social distancing, and they'll start thinking they can begin traveling again. As this tapers off, we think an influx of people into surrounding counties could bring the coronavirus from multiple other places, and we could see another spike in surrounding counties.
Billen says Yellowstone National Park itself employs hundreds of seasonal, international, and domestic employees, plus hundreds of thousands of tourists from all over the world will be in the region when the park is open. Billen says this influx of people will probably start arriving sometime in July.
This concerns us on two levels. Number one, they could bring the coronavirus from other locations and expose people who live and work here, and that with a big influx of tourist visitors, people who get sick here would then be subject to our resources here that probably will be stretched thin.
The problem is no one knows how long the pandemic will last. But most scientists and health experts agree. The best case scenario is it will be 12 to 18 months until a vaccine is developed. So until then, it will have to be a balancing act between economic impact and the health and safety of residents. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Camila Kadalska at the Center of the West in Cody.
Earlier this month, Governor Mark Gordon and Superintendent of Public Instruction Jillian Balow handed down a recommendation. All Wyoming schools should be shut down, now until April 17th. The hope was to slow the spread of coronavirus. Some schools were on spring break, and the closures just felt like an extra long vacation at first. But as Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards found out, lots of parents are left wondering whether they are now responsible to homeschool.
Samira Camaño and her two young kids are making the best of things.
I've implemented a schedule with long work periods, and so I'm trying to do my job during that time while they are doing their work.
Camaño teaches chemistry at the Laramie County Community College's Albany County campus. She's a little worried about next week, though, when her students will be returning virtually.
Next week is when the community college is actually going back on schedule, so I'm going to need to be more available for my students, and I don't know what that's going to look like.
Camaño is a single mom, and so there's no one to watch her kids while she's getting her grading and lesson plans done. Then there's Alejandra Silva. She's married with four children at home, between 5 and 15. The school closure has thrown their life into chaos.
I work for the Eastern Shoshone Tribe. I do their public relations, and then my husband's the CEO of their Boys and Girls Club. So I'm a pretty busy person, especially with all of this going on. I've been helping the tribe, you know, the public outreach and trying to get information together.
But Silva says Fremont County schools are offering online classes already, and she has enjoyed the space and time to engage with her five-year-old using some of the resources they sent over.
He's reading out loud, and I think, you know, I knew he was reading and was learning how to read, but when I heard him read out loud for like so long, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're such a good reader. I knew you knew how to, you know, you were learning, but this is kind of showing me like you're really good at this.
The Park County School District also has kids learning online already. Emily Buckles works full-time in the Buffalo Bill Center in Cody. She was impressed with how fast the district got the system up and running. Maybe too fast? She and her husband have two kids, one in elementary, the other in middle school.
Everything just felt very unsettled last week because we didn't really know what the expectations were going to be. And I wasn't, you get all this peer pressure through social media that everybody's, you know, got these incredible schedules for their kids and they're doing math from 9 to 10 and they're doing reading from 11 to 12. And you kind of have this anxiety like, oh my God, are we all supposed to be doing this all of a sudden? Yeah.
You try to work in that little nudge zone you have between I'm not paying attention to you and burn it all down.
That's Heather Rothfuss, mother of four, two teenagers, two little kiddos. She's also married to State Senator Chris Rothfuss and holds down two part-time jobs of her own as a scientist. So this is a busy family at the best of times. She says her teenagers are especially hard to keep on task.
You get like 3 millimeters of influence. And I think I just have to deal with that. And if they choose not to learn the material this spring, and if they choose to get bad grades, I'm going to have to just suck it up and be okay with that.
You probably heard me agreeing with Heather. That's because I'm battling with two teenage girls right now as well. And for all us parents, it's not clear if this statewide school shutdown will last through the spring or not. That's partly what makes this so stressful for families. And for the educators themselves. Jubal Yenny, Albany County's superintendent, says he's telling his teachers to prepare for the long haul.
We don't know if that's going to look like, a Kansas model, which is okay the rest of the year, or if it's going to look like a South Dakota model, which is May 1. From our standpoint, I'm sharing that message. Let's prepare for the rest of the year.
Yenny says his district is scrambling to get a virtual learning system in place by early April. But he assures parents there's no pressure, especially since the ACT and all other testing have been canceled for March, with hopes to do some of it online in April.
We strive to lessen the anxiety from folks, and we also try to take the pressure off that and say we're not expecting anybody to be providing academic lessons during this next 2 weeks.
In the meantime, parents trying to keep their kids occupied could learn a thing or two from a pro. Laramie homeschool mom Lori Homer has five kids, two in college already, a teen, and a pair of twin 6-year-olds. Her advice to parents trying to establish their authority as teachers: offer incentives, save screen time for the end of the day after they have all their schoolwork done, and just relax.
I think the best thing you can do for your kids is bring out some toys that they haven't seen in a long time, put out a bunch of craft supplies, go outside and play, and let your kids play a lot, all ages, teenagers too. Get board games out. I think right now people need that, really, play therapy. They need to, it's a very stressful time.
Okay, that's me scribbling down all of these ideas. If you want to get some more ideas on how to keep your Wyoming kids active and learning while maintaining social distancing, visit us at wyomingpublicmedia.org. For Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Melody Edwards.
Top state officials have recommended Wyoming schools stay closed now through April 17th as a way to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus. State Superintendent Jillian Balow and the Wyoming Department of Education have been working with districts across the state to help figure out how schools will work for all students if the closure continues. Wyoming Public Radio's Catherine Wheeler spoke with Balow first about how statewide exams have been canceled for this year.
President Trump announced waivers that were available for states that would essentially exempt states from some key assessment and accountability requirements. Wyoming immediately sought the waiver and was approved. And so what that means for our state is that we will not be taking the statewide YTOP assessment, and we will not be figuring formal accountability that essentially grades schools on their performance based on a number of metrics. Essentially, we are at a point across the nation, including in Wyoming, where the validity and reliability of our statewide assessment was in jeopardy because students weren't in school and were potentially losing instructional time leading up to the test. So we're really grateful for the waiver. And, you know, at this point, we're putting the health, safety, and welfare of children and families above assessments, certainly. That's not to say that we can't continue instruction. It will just be continued instruction without the statewide assessment looming.
And you also waived instructional days for schools as well. Is that correct?
All schools in Wyoming from March 16th through April 3rd are in a hold harmless phase, which means that students are counted as present, but the governor and I have recommended that students do not attend school in a traditional sense. We have some school districts who have opted to provide some kind of instructional activities for students, and others who may have bumped up against a spring break and did not provide instructional materials for students. So for 3 weeks, that hold harmless is basically school districts taking time to, again, monitor the health, welfare, and well-being of children and families, and then stand up alternative instructional or education plans should we need to go beyond April 3rd with school closures.
Is there anything the department is considering overall to kind of help out in these circumstances?
We really don't anticipate that every school district will go to virtual education. Some will be a hybrid of virtual education and maybe phone calls. Some of them will utilize our state learning management system. And so I anticipate that there will be lots of different ways that school districts leverage both traditional and virtual learning opportunities for students. But we've really been trying to think about that at the state level. We've provided additional guidance on virtual education. We've provided some additional training on our learning management system called Canvas. And we'll continue to do that too. You know, I anticipate that some of the biggest needs will be around building the capacity of teaching staff and faculty in making sure that they can meet the individual needs of learners, regardless of what adapted learning form or mode they go to. So we'll just continue providing as many resources and providing a technical assistance and guidance that helps all districts, but we'll stop short of prescribing what that should look like for each district, knowing that it can look different for every district.
And will any of this have a direct impact on either how schools are funded or any other potential impacts into the next year or years to come based off this?
At this point, it's not costing the state or school districts more or less. So when I say hold harmless, it really is just that. Schools are being funded today as if they're open. Should we go beyond April 3rd, that may look a little bit different. What we're working with schools and superintendents across the state on right now is coming up with an alternative education program should we continue school closures beyond April 3rd that ensures that students still have access to a high quality education and that essential teachings and learnings are still available for all students.
Jillian Balow is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction at the Wyoming Department of Education. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today.
All right. Well, thanks, Catherine, for the opportunity.
We will wrap up the program in just a moment with an expert in social distancing. This is Open Spaces. Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Bob Beck. We're all social distancing, and it's unclear when that will end. But as Ray Ellen Bichelle reports, one man has been doing this for almost 50 years, and he has some tips.
Billy Barr is the only full-time resident of an abandoned silver mining town more than 12,000 feet up in the Rocky Mountains. It's Gothic, Colorado.
I'm the mayor and the chief of police. I hold elections every year, but I don't tell anybody when they are, so it works out really well.
And he wants to be clear. His tips may well be entirely useless.
It works for me. It quite conceivably wouldn't work for anybody else.
And full disclosure, he doesn't consider himself a true hermit. He occasionally interacts with skiers who pass through, he talks to his sister on the phone, and he works for the Rocky Mountain Biological Station nearby, which gets flooded with scientists in the summer. But the man has been living alone in a cabin in the mountains for many, many years, and in the winter months he can go many days without seeing a soul. So, staying home during the COVID-19 outbreak?
Yeah, I mean, this is no change for me. I mean, I come into winter with almost all my food already in.
So without further ado, here are five recommendations. Number one, keep track of something. Barr started measuring snow levels in the 1970s, mostly because he was bored.
Everything depends on the weather. It controls what I did, and so I would write it all down.
He'd also write down when he saw an animal.
With the birds, especially the ones that arrive in the spring, it was exciting. It was like, oh my goodness, it's sunrise, and I can hear robins.
Turns out, monitoring things that were important to his daily life had real value. His notes have informed dozens of studies on climate change. In the era of COVID-19, he suggests some citizen science, like a project that tracks rainfall across the country.
I would definitely recommend people doing that. You get a little rain gauge, put it outside, and you're part of a network where there's thousands of other people doing the same thing as you, the same time of the day as you're doing it. It's very interesting.
Number two, keep a routine. Barr starts early. He gets out of bed at about 5.
Up until a week or two ago, I would listen to the news every morning so that I could start every day either totally depressed or furious. That's always a good way to start the day. Now with the whole COVID and with politics and stuff.
He says he just can't. So he listens to old-time radio instead. Then it's time to clear the snow off his solar panels and file weather reports to a bunch of different agencies. The rest of the day involves work and chores interspersed with skiing.
So I kind of follow a set time schedule. Sometimes I forget what day it is, but I know what time it is.
Most importantly, he says, reward yourself at the end of the day. He'll read, knit something, watch a movie, and then watch a game of cricket.
That's pretty much it. And it's pretty much the same day after day. Most of it I enjoy.
Recommendation number three, celebrate the stuff that matters rather than the stuff you're supposed to celebrate. For example, Barr has mostly ditched holidays and birthdays, but he does celebrate January 17th, when sunrise goes back to what it was on the solstice.
To me, that's a big deal because, like I said, I get up so early in the morning that the lighter it gets earlier makes my day a lot easier.
He also celebrates when he gets back from skiing 8 miles each way into the town of Crested Butte for supplies.
Town can be kind of stressful, so I save my favorite movies and I save my favorite meals and I save things to do. So when I ski back from town and I'm home, it's like, woohoo, big party time.
Number four, embrace the grumpiness. Sometimes he says it's kind of satisfying to be grumpy about something. These days, Barr is feeling especially grumpy because of what else? The coronavirus.
Ironically, I have been in contact with one person in the last 9 days. That was 8 days ago.
And then that guy got sick.
I don't know what he has, but for the last week, I've been sitting around wondering if I'm going to get it.
Which brings us to his final tip. Use movies as a mood adjuster.
Oh, yeah. The Princess Bride's my pretty much favorite movie. I like Hugh Grant stuff like Love Actually, Notting Hill.
And he also recommends anything Bollywood. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Raylan Bichelle.
And finally, every year at the Gathering of Nations powwow, dozens of young Indigenous women compete for the title of Miss Indian World. This year, Christy Wildcat was among the contestants. She's a citizen of the Northern Arapaho tribe and a UW senior, but the powwow and the pageant were canceled to help slow the spread of the coronavirus. Wildcat speaks about the experience with Wyoming Public Radio's Savannah Marr.
How long have you known that you wanted to be Miss Indian World?
So back in 2013, I was at the inauguration powwow for Obama's second term, and I just happened to look and I see this giant crown towering over everybody. And I was like, Mom, that's like a beautiful crown. Like, what'd you have to do to get it? And she told me about Miss Indian World. And she said, one day, like when you're old enough, go for it. You know, you got to be knowledgeable in your culture, your language. And she was telling me like everything you have to do. And so from then on, I like established like once I'm ready, once I'm old enough, I want to run for Miss Indian World. It was finally this year, and I'm like, you know what? I feel like I'm ready. Might as well run.
And so how do you prepare for a contest like this? I know there are four categories. Can you tell me about those and how you prepared for each of them?
So there's a dance category, interview category, public speaking, and traditional talent. But the main category I focused on was the talent portion, and my talent was going to be archery. I was going to string my bow because I had the old-style recurve bow. From there, I was going to, you know, kind of narrate, tell a story, tell some history of the Arapaho people and hunting, and then bring it forward through time and kind of connect it to women in hunting because women are starting to hunt more and more in this modern day, and they're, like, providing, they're being the breadwinners of the family. So I was going to connect that to the pageant empowering women, you know, just kind of tied together hunting and women and all of this, all while stringing a bow. And then I was going to shoot the bow into a target.
And so I'm sure you also were doing a lot of work on, like, your outfit and just getting ready for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a whole family effort for the outfit. I had one grandma making a new jingle dress. Another grandma was making moccasins and leggings. Like, it was a whole family effort.
And you mentioned that you had a lot of community support. Like when I asked you for this interview, you said you wanted to use this as an opportunity to thank the people who supported you while you were preparing. So what do you want to say to your community?
I just want to thank them from like the bottom of my heart because I didn't think I would have so much support, but they just came up across the community from the reservation to Riverton to Lander, you know, Du Bois, all over Fremont County. It really made me kind of want to tear up, you know, and I didn't want to let them down when I went, if I were to really run. So that's what I vowed that I would run next year, you know, because I couldn't let all that support just, you know, go to waste. And I really want to represent Fremont County and like Riverton and like the Wind River, like reservation really well, you know.
Yeah. And next year when you do get to compete for real, what do you think it would mean for your tribe and for Fremont County to have a Northern Arapaho woman representing them at that level?
I think it'd be amazing because this is just such a high title. And, you know, people look at Wyoming and they're like, oh, there's nothing there really, you know, there's just cows. But just to say like, hey, we have tribal people here who are really proud and really determined in their culture. Like, I think it would definitely be like a game changer, you know, because there's definitely has not been someone from Wyoming to win this title. So it'd be a first for all.
Well, now you have a whole year to keep working on that and mm-hmm. to keep preparing.
Exactly. That's what, you know, I was kind of sad and down, but my friends and family said, well, think of it as an extra year to prepare. So when you go, you could go fully prepared. My mom said, maybe like the creators saw something you weren't ready for it. Now you could be ready for it.
Well, Christy, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with me. And I hope we can talk again next year when you're getting ready to compete.
For sure, for sure.
Thanks for listening to Open Spaces. If you missed part of the show or want to hear an individual segment, you can find it at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Just click on Open Spaces. The show is also available via podcast, and a number of our segments will be on social media. Anna Rader is our web editor. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.